Leon walked down the deserted road. His shoulder muscles knotted under his backpack, the sword that hung at his left side chafing at his leg. The war he had fought in for the last 2 years was finally over, and though his fellow soldiers were celebrating their victory by getting drunk, all he could think of was returning home. A tree, much larger than the others around it, loomed next to the road ahead. As Leon approached it, he heard a noise from behind the tree. He paused.
"Who's there?" he called, a hand on his sword. "Show yourself."
Slowly, a figure emerged from behind the tree. An elderly, frail-looking woman, hunched and slow. She shuffled toward Leon and raised her eyes to meet his stare. Her eyes were fathomless and full of power, and he stood frozen in place, unable to move or blink or think.
"Good evening, soldier," said the witch. "Would you like to be rich beyond your wildest dreams?"
I'm Vanessa Richardson. You're listening to Tales. Today, I'm sharing the story of The Tinderbox, a Scandinavian folktale first recorded by the famed fairy tale author Hans Christian Andersen. The tales on this podcast are dark, sometimes scary, and full of adult themes. As a warning, The Tinderbox includes descriptions of kidnapping, sexual assault, and violent death. Please exercise caution for children under 13. If you want to hear more tales, you can find episodes on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, or Parcast.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review. A new episode will release every other Saturday, so if you enjoy it, subscribe. The Tinderbox is based on the Scandinavian folktale The Spirit in the Candle, which was largely passed down orally. Hans Christian Andersen heard the story in his childhood and later used it as the framework for The Tinderbox, which he included in a collection of fairy tale stories. German and Austrian variations of the tale that were recorded after Andersen's publication of The Tinderbox followed this version closely. So either Andersen's version influenced the existing oral tradition in the region, or he stayed very close to his source. Though it was a popular piece of folklore, the published version of The Tinderbox was poorly received by literary critics. They perceived a lack of moral clarity in Andersen's stories, which at the time was felt to be highly important in children's literature. The Tinderbox is quite a bit darker and less morally straightforward than most of the fairy tales we know and love. Leon stared at the witch, and the witch stared back, inspecting Leon's worn old sword and ragged backpack.
"Well, what do you say? Do you want to be wealthy or not?"
Leon didn't hesitate. Being a soldier wasn't the most lucrative career, and besides that, he knew you didn't say no to a witch, not unless you wanted to live out the rest of your days as a frog or a rat.
"Yes," he said. "Thank you very much."
"Good," the witch said,
smiling widely to reveal teeth that were surprisingly shiny and white, considering how ancient she looked.
She pointed at the tree. "This is hollow inside. You must climb up to the top, where there's a hole you can enter, and let yourself down into the tree and what lies beneath it. I'll tie a rope around your body. Call out to me, and I'll pull you up again."
"All right," Leon said. "What do I need to do when I'm down there?"
"I'm getting to that," the witch said. "Beneath the tree is a large hall. You'll see 3 doors with keys in their locks. In each room is a large chest with a dog sitting on top of it. Their eyes are giant, and they might look scary, but don't be afraid of them. Just spread my blue checked apron on the floor and put the dog on it. Then you can take whatever you want from the chests."
Leon considered it for a moment. It all seemed fairly straightforward, but he knew that usually tasks like this one had a catch. Everyone knew you couldn't trust a witch. But he was a soldier, and the witch was an old lady, and Leon was fairly certain that he could kill her if he needed to.
"What do you want in return?"
Leon asked.
"I assume you're not telling me all this for free."
"Of course not," the witch said. "I don't want a single coin from you, but promise me you'll bring me an old tinderbox. It belonged to my grandmother. She left it behind the last time she went down there."
Leon frowned at the witch, wondering if the tinderbox contained something horrible, like a plague or a terrible curse.
"Why?"
"That's no concern of yours," the witch said. "Will you bring it to me or not?"
"I will,"
Leon said, though he was starting to have second thoughts about the whole thing. He told himself that if anything seemed amiss when he got out of the tree, he could just kill the witch and feel no guilt. After all, it would be a faster and kinder death than being burned at the stake. The witch tied a long rope around him and gave him her blue checked apron. Then Leon climbed up the tree and let himself down through the hollow to the ground beneath. Beneath the tree, he found himself in a large hall, illuminated by hundreds of lamps. He walked across the hall and entered the first room, where he found the first dog sitting on a chest. He was a huge hound with eyes as big as teacups that swiveled like a chameleon's, following Leon as he paced around the room.
"Nice dog,"
Leon said nervously. The dog growled in response, but didn't move. Careful not to turn his back on the dog, Leon pulled the apron out of his backpack. He lifted the dog onto the apron before the dog could bite him. Then he filled his pockets with copper from the chest, closed the chest, and put the dog back on top. Leon walked into the next chamber and found another chest with an even bigger dog on top, with even bigger and more horrible eyes.
"If you keep staring at me like that, your eyes will start watering,"
he told the dog and moved him to the apron on the floor. When he opened the chest, he gasped. It was full of silver, worth much more than the copper coins he was holding. He quickly threw away all the copper and filled his pockets with silver. Then he entered the third room. This dog was the biggest of all, and he was hideous. His eyes were as big as towers, and they swiveled around in his head like giant wheels. Leon paused at the threshold as the dog growled ferociously.
"Good boy," he said. "Good boy."
The dog's growls quieted a bit, and Leon lunged at him. He lifted the dog onto the apron and opened the chest to find it full of gold. Leon gasped as it shimmered before his eyes. He'd be able to buy all the food he wanted, all the clothes, all the weapons, even a whole town. He threw away all his silver and stuffed his backpack, his pockets, his cap, and his boots with gold, weighing himself down so heavily he could barely walk. Then he put the dog back on the chest.
"Lift me up,"
he called to the witch, tugging on the rope, and she did, grunting with the effort.
"So you got the money," the witch said. "Where's my tinderbox?"
"Oh, that,"
Leon said, not really paying attention. He was too busy trying to decide what he would buy first with his newfound wealth.
"I forgot it."
"Well, go back in and get it,"
The witch snapped. Leon opened his mouth to argue, and then remembered that she was a witch. Grumpily, he climbed the tree again. It was much harder with all the gold on his person, but he couldn't bear to risk parting with it, and went back down into the hall. He quickly found the tinderbox, tugged on the rope, and the witch pulled him out of the tree again. She held her hand out.
"What are you going to do with the tinderbox?"
Leon asked her again.
"I already told you, that's none of your business," the witch said. "You have your money, now give me the tinderbox."
"Does it have magical powers?"
he asked.
"Is it cursed?"
The witch snorted.
"What, are you only growing a conscience now? Give me the tinderbox."
Leon drew his sword.
"If you don't tell me what you're going to do with it, I'll cut your head off," he said.
The witch laughed scornfully again.
"No,"
she said. In one quick strike, Leon cut her head off. It fell onto the ground with a soft thump and was quickly followed by her body. The head rolled until it came to a stop. Stepping over it and ignoring the way the witch's eyes seemed to be glaring at him still, Leon wrapped all the gold from his boots, backpack, and pockets in the witch's apron and slung it across his back. Then he put the tinderbox in his pocket and set off for the closest town, which happened to border the king's estate. He left the witch's body on the road. We'll return to our story in just a moment from the Parcast Network. And now, back to the story. After killing the witch and stealing her tinderbox, Leon began to live a lavish life, one that was very different from the life he'd known before. A life where he wore fine clothes, went to the theater, rode through the king's forest, and lived in an expensive apartment. He also made it a point to give generously to the poor, both because he could remember how it had felt to be a penniless soldier, and because it was good for his social standing in the village to be seen as a generous philanthropist. At a party filled with the town's nobility, Leon got to talking with a duke, who told Leon about the king's beautiful daughter, Princess Willa. At this, Leon's ears perked up. He hadn't been with a woman in quite some time, and now that he was wealthy and grand, he felt like he was worthy of a princess. Or rather, that a princess was worthy of him.
"How can I see her?"
he asked the duke.
"You can't," the duke said. "I myself have only seen a painting. She lives in the giant copper castle in the middle of all those towers and walls, and no one but her parents can go in or out, because a prophecy says that she will someday marry a common soldier, and the king can't bear to risk that. Nor should he. Can you imagine?"
Leon laughed along with the duke, but now his curiosity was more piqued than ever, because, of course, despite his expensive clothes and home, he was really just a common soldier. But try as he might, no matter who he asked, he could not find a way into the king's inner circle, or even his outer walls. The money Leon had taken from the hall beneath the tree couldn't last forever, especially given how quickly he was spending it with no income. Before he knew it, he was all but penniless once more, and had been evicted from his elegant apartment. The only place he was able to afford was a tiny attic in the eaves of the building, and none of his so-called friends paid him even a single visit. One dark and rainy evening, Leon was attempting to mend his boots, but didn't even have a single candle for light. Suddenly, he thought of the tinderbox, which he'd never opened or used. Maybe it had an old candle wedged inside of it. It was a long shot, but he opened it anyway, took out the flint and steel, and struck them together. The attic door flew open, and the dog with eyes as big as teacups stood in front of him and said,
"What are your orders, master?"
Leon's jaw dropped. Then he grinned.
"Bring me some money," he told the dog. "Your wish is my command."
The dog vanished out the door and returned in a few minutes with a large bag of copper coins in its mouth. Only copper.
"How do I get more silver and gold coins?" Leon demanded. "Strike the flint twice for the dog who guards the silver, or three times for the dog who guards the gold,"
the copper dog answered.
"That makes sense," Leon said and laughed.
It seemed that the answers to all his troubles kept presenting themselves to him without his even having to ask. Any guilt that might have lingered concerning his murder of the witch faded from his mind. It had all been worth it. Thanks to the tinderbox, Leon's coffers were refilled, and he made a triumphant return to his luxurious apartment and lifestyle. Late one night, after a few glasses of expensive whiskey, he realized that the tinderbox had also provided him with a way to get to Princess Willa.
"Everyone says she's beautiful, but what's the point of beauty if it's locked up in a copper castle?"
he said to the copper dog.
"I want to see her, even if it's just for a moment. Bring her to me." "Your wish is my command," said the dog.
The dog disappeared and returned after a moment with the sleeping princess on his back. She was just as beautiful as the Duke had said.
"There you go,"
the copper dog said.
"You've seen her for a moment. Should I take her back home?"
"Yes,"
Leon said. "But I want to do something first." He took in the beautiful sleeping princess, leaned down and kissed her on the lips. Leon thought she smiled in her sleep. But the copper dog looked about as disapproving as a dog can.
"What?" Leon said, seeing the dog's look. "Remember the prophecy? We're meant to be together, even if she doesn't know it yet."
The copper dog said nothing, and after a moment, Leon stepped away. Leon knew in the back of his mind that what he was doing was wrong, but he didn't care. He felt certain that the tinderbox had made him invincible to the rules that normal people followed. He was special, and he deserved to kiss Princess Willa, whether she knew it or not. The dog ran off to deposit Willa back in her bed. The next morning, the king sat down to breakfast in the copper castle. He and his queen often joined their daughter for meals to make sure she wouldn't get lonely and try to escape her confines. The meal was perfectly normal, until his daughter said,
"I had the strangest dream last night. A dog with giant eyes carried me to a handsome soldier's house. Then the soldier kissed me. And then the dog put me back in my room, and then I woke up."
The king and queen exchanged a dark glance. Willa was oblivious about the prophecy that said she'd someday marry a soldier, but she was at peak marriageable age, and her parents were on high alert for any strange incidents involving the S word. The king sometimes thought he might be best served banishing Willa from the country entirely. He and his wife both agreed that would be better than marriage to a common soldier.
"You know," Willa said, raising an eyebrow at her parents, "I feel as though being constantly locked in this castle might be giving me bad dreams. Maybe if you just let me out once in a while."
"Out of the question," the queen said. "It's just a strange dream, I'm sure. I'm going to put Anna, my lady-in-waiting, in your room tonight to make sure you're not sleepwalking."
"Fine," Willa said, buttering her toast. "Father, I think you're gripping that egg a bit firmly."
"Ah, yes,"
the king said stiffly, unclenching his hand from the pulverized mess that had been his breakfast.
That night, Anna, the queen's lady-in-waiting, sat watching Willa sleep. She was young, intelligent, and able to think quickly in stressful circumstances, which was why the queen had chosen her for this task. But she was also bored and tired, and she was just about to nod off herself when a large, copper-colored dog climbed into the room through the window. The dog's huge, unearthly eyes swiveled madly. He ignored Anna, charging the sleeping princess. Before Anna could stand, the dog and Willa flew out the window. When Anna had recovered her wits, she ran to the king and queen and told them what had happened. The king fainted. The queen, who was made of sterner stuff, sent guards out to patrol the city in search of her daughter. But by the time they got outside the palace gates, Willa, still sleeping, had been returned to her bed. The dog had gone in and out of her room far too fast for the guard posted there to catch him.
"What will we do?"
the king cried, pacing back and forth in his sitting room.
"Calm yourself," the queen snapped. "We're going to find out where that dog's been taking Willa, and we won't do it by fainting."
Our story will continue in a moment after a brief message. Now the story continues.
Ouch! Anna pinched herself again. She had to stay vigilant this time. Per the queen's plan, it was only her and Willa in the room. They couldn't arouse suspicion. After all, Willa still believed that the soldier was just an odd dream. It was up to Anna to wait for the large copper-colored dog. Shortly after midnight, the dog flew into the window and swooped under Willa. Anna grabbed onto the dog's tail just as he was about to climb out the window again and was swept away with him and Willa. She let go just before the dog flew into Leon's house. The house was identical to all the others around it, and Anna wasn't sure she'd remember which one the dog had taken Willa to. Thinking quickly, she found a piece of chalk and marked Leon's door with a large cross. Then she ran back to the castle to summon the king and queen. The copper dog hated being complicit in the sexual assault of the princess, but it wasn't the worst thing a master of the tinderbox had commanded of him. He was cursed to be obedient, and obedient he would be. At the very least, his big eyes and looming presence helped him pressure his master into letting the princess go again quickly and not going farther than a few unwanted kisses. When the dog left Leon's house to return the princess to her bed, he saw a chalk cross on the door. With a sigh, he found another piece of chalk and made identical crosses on all the doors in town, so that Leon's house would be indistinguishable from all the others. He was a good dog.
"They're starting to suspect you," he told Leon when he returned. "You should stop kidnapping Princess Willa." "I can't," Leon said. "I love her. I have to keep seeing her. I just wish I could have been a prince. She'll never marry a common soldier."
The dog gave a long-suffering sigh. He wondered how long it would be before someone chopped off the head of this obsessive scoundrel. Leon seemed to have no further commands. Deeming his work done, the dog flew back to the hallway under the tree. The next morning, Queen was relieved that her plan had worked, but relief faded all too quickly when she, her husband, and a number of guards set out to arrest the kidnapper. They saw chalk marks on every door in the town.
"That's fine," the queen said, undaunted. "I have a better plan."
That night, the queen dug a small silk bag out of her closet and cut a tiny hole in it. Then she filled it with flour and hung it around Willa's neck after she fell asleep. The trail would lead her right to the kidnapper. For a moment, the queen felt a twinge of guilt that she hadn't told her daughter about her nightly kidnappings. But after all, wasn't it more important to catch the culprit? And did it really matter what happened to Willa while she was asleep? After all, the queen thought, the most important thing was that Willa didn't run away with a soldier and sully the whole kingdom's reputation. One more nightly kidnapping was a small price to pay for avoiding that outcome. The next morning, Leon was greeted at his front door by the king, queen, and a group of guards who arrested him for kidnapping and assaulting the princess. The king immediately sentenced Leon to death. Though Leon protested at the lack of a trial, none of the king's judges would stay the ruling. He harmed the princess, so he had to pay. Leon's execution was scheduled for the very next day, and because he had left the tinderbox on his table when he'd gone to answer the door, there was nothing he could do. As they took him to jail, Leon wondered if his beloved Willa had any idea what was to befall him. She didn't seem like the vindictive type. More than likely, her overprotective parents were keeping her completely in the dark. When the news spread that the mysterious, rich soldier who'd only recently come to town had kidnapped Princess Willa not once, not twice, but three times, people flocked out of their houses to watch his hanging. From his dark, damp jail cell, Leon heard drums beating, and he saw the army marching toward the gallows. Townspeople streamed after them, and a shoemaker's boy ran by so fast that one of his slippers flew off and landed next to the barred window through which Leon was looking. Leon reached out and snatched the shoe before the boy could retrieve it.
"What's your hurry?"
he said, waving it as the boy ran up to the window.
"You know they can't start without me, right?"
"Hey!"
shouted the boy.
"Give that back, convict, or I'll call the warden."
"Listen," the soldier said. "I'll give you back the shoe, plus a bag of gold coins, if you'll do me a favor."
"I'm listening,"
the boy said. Leon gave the boy directions to his house and told him to grab the tinderbox that he'd left on the table. The boy ran off to get it, limping slightly because of his single shoe. When he returned, Leon took the tinderbox and gave the boy back his shoe.
"Where's my gold?" the boy demanded.
"Be patient," Leon said. "You'll get your gold in a bit."
"I should never have trusted a convict,"
the boy muttered, and left to go find a good spot from which to watch the execution. A squad of soldiers led Leon to the gallows, which had been constructed on the outskirts of town. The king and queen sat on elaborate thrones across from their judges and counselors. Princess Willa was nowhere to be seen. Leon had been right. They'd kept her shut in her copper castle. The crowd of townspeople jeered and shouted at the sight of Leon as he ascended the gallows. Leon stopped on the second to last stair.
"Don't I get a last request?"
he called out. The judges and counselors hastily conferred with each other as the king frowned at them.
"We'll allow it,"
the head judge called finally.
"What is your request?"
"I'd like to smoke a cigar," Leon said. "The last cigar I'll ever smoke in this world. Please don't deny me this."
"All right,"
the king said.
"Someone get him a cigar and a light."
"Oh, I have one,"
Leon said.
"If someone could just unchain my hands."
The king wavered again, but relented. He waved a hand, and a soldier came forward to unlock Leon's shackles and give him a cigar.
"Thank you," Leon said.
He pulled out his tinderbox and struck the flint and steel together once, then twice,
then three times. The copper dog, the silver dog, and the gold dog all appeared in front of him.
"What are your orders, master?"
they all asked at once.
"Help me," Leon said. "Save me from being hanged."
"Your wish is our command."
The dogs all turned away from Leon to face the judges and counselors, who all gasped and backed away as they saw the dogs' huge, horrible eyes. As one, the dogs growled. Then they pounced, biting, ripping, clawing, sometimes just throwing their victims so high into the air that they didn't move again after landing. In a matter of minutes, 18 people were dead. The three dogs dripped blood. The crowd was stunned. Amid the horrified silence, the dogs turned their attention to the monarchs cowering in their thrones.
"Oh no,"
the king said.
"Oh, don't you dare touch me. I am the king. I am..."
The dogs pounced again, and soon the king and queen's bodies had joined the pile of counselors and judges that stained the grass red.
"Now free me,"
Leon said, and the silver dog bit through the rest of the shackles binding him. Leon stared out across the crowd.
"Will anyone else challenge me?"
he demanded. Nobody answered. Slowly, the shoemaker's boy dropped to one knee. The rest of the petrified crowd followed suit.
"The king is dead!"
shouted the town crier.
"Long live the king!"
Leon grinned and then laughed. Once again, things were falling into place. There was just one more missing piece.
"Bring me Princess Willa,"
he said to the copper dog. When the copper dog reluctantly set Willa down in front of Leon, she stared at him in confusion.
"You're real," she said. "I thought I dreamed you."
"I'm real," Leon said, taking her hands. "I was just a common soldier before, but now I'm a king, and every king needs a queen."
Willa stared at the scene around the gallows, fully registering the blood and gore around her. Her eyes landed on her parents' bodies, and she gasped.
"They're dead," she said numbly. "My parents are dead."
"Yes," Leon said. "Your parents, who locked you in a copper castle your entire life just so that you wouldn't marry someone they disapproved of, are dead. I'll bet they also didn't tell you that a dog was bringing you to me every night, or that they locked you up because of a prophecy that said you'd marry a soldier."
Willa laughed.
"You misunderstand me," she said, a grin spreading across her face. "This is the first time I've been outside, well, the first time I've been awake and outside, in years. My parents kept me prisoner my whole life. For the first time, I'm free. And I have you to thank, even though I would rather have kissed you while I was awake."
"Your wish is my command,"
Leon said, and kissed her. Leon and Willa's wedding festivities lasted an entire week, and the dogs were granted a seat of honor at the head table for that week and all the weeks to come. As we mentioned earlier, The Tinderbox was poorly received by critics because of the dubious morality of its protagonist. The soldier isn't noble or pure of heart, as so many fairy tale heroes are. In contrast, he is impulsive, violent, and often greedy. He murders a witch, even though she's not threatening him, finds a way to take advantage of a magical object so that he can have unlimited wealth, repeatedly kidnaps and assaults a princess, kills the king, queen, and a number of counselors, and is never punished for any of these actions.
In the end, he's crowned king because everyone else is afraid of him. Though he does give some of his money to charity, he is an anti-hero at best. As for the princess, in the story, she seems to be completely unfazed by her parents' violent deaths. She's just excited to be queen. This isn't typical behavior for fairy tale princesses, who are usually kind and loving, especially toward their families. So maybe Anderson intended the tinderbox as an illustration of how sometimes good things happen to bad people, and what goes around doesn't always come around. Or maybe he just wanted to tell a strange, magical, and moral-free story he remembered from the harvest seasons of his childhood. Thanks for listening to Tales. If you want to listen to more Tales, you can find us and subscribe on your favorite podcast directory or listen on Parcast.com. If you enjoyed the show, we'd truly appreciate a 5-star review. We'll see you next time. Tales was created by Max Cutler. It is a production of Cutler Media and is part of the Parcast Network. It is produced by Max and Ron Cutler, sound designed by Ron Shapiro, with production assistance by Paul Mahler. Additional production assistance by Maggie Admire and Carly Madden. Tales is written by Rekha Mohan. I'm Vanessa Richardson.